You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Politico magazine has spent 2014 investigating innovative ideas that are helping urban areas reinvent themselves. In their latest installment, they look at how Milwaukee has used data and community policing to reduce crime.
First, every year around this time, we're bombarded with reminders to get the flu shot.
And every year around this time, we also hear people warning of possible dangers of immunization or saying it's unnecessary, that the human immune system can deal with the flu on its own.
How does the vaccination process alter viruses and affect health in the short and long term? With us now to look at that question is environmental toxicologist Emily Monison. She's adjunct professor at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and the author of the new book, Unnatural Selection, How We're Changing Life Gene by Gene. Emily, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
For a lot of people, the decision whether or not to get the flu shot, for instance, or to vaccinate their kids, it's a tough one. What is the thinking behind some of the questions about not getting a flu shot?
Well, first I have to say that every year I have asthma, and so I get the flu vaccine, and I ask my family and friends also to get the flu vaccine. And because of this, it made me sort of wonder, because I live in an area where people have a lot of questions, as you say, about vaccinations. Should they get vaccinated against the flu? So since I was thinking about rapid evolution and how we change things like how the chemicals that we use and cause resistance in antibiotics and herbicides and pesticides cause resistance, I wondered what we might do to viruses. And so one of the questions is, the flu virus is evolves very rapidly, which makes it really interesting from an evolutionary perspective. It's sort of a master of evolution. And the virus evolves in response naturally to our immune system. So it's a sort of predator-prey relationship where we get infected by the flu virus, our immune system responds, and the viruses mutate. And some of those mutations might be helpful, and some of those mutations might not be helpful, and some of them might help them evade our immune response. And so the question that I had was, well, if our immune response influences evolution of flu viruses, I was wondering just if vaccination would do the same thing, because what vaccination does is provoke our immune response. And so that's the question that I explored in the book. And it turns out that it's very unlikely that vaccination would influence evolution of the immune response, in part because we just don't have high enough coverage, and in part because how flu viruses evolve.
Right. So that's an interesting question, I mean, that people have wondered about, besides yourself as well. You know, are we creating deadlier viruses by getting vaccinated? Because we get vaccinated, the virus falls behind, and then it races to catch up, and maybe it could overtake us. Are there any examples that you can point to that show that maybe that could be happening?
The one example that I refer to in the book, where there is that kind of dynamic with vaccination and a virus, is a bird virus called Marek's disease, which causes cancers in poultry. And what happened was the virus infected poultry. There was a very high rate of vaccination in response, and it looks like the virus has evolved to be more virulent, a better killer, in response to vaccination. But that was a very high coverage, and it's a very different virus from flu. And I think that the people who study, like Andrew Reed, who study responses of viruses like the flu to vaccines, think that this is pretty unlikely, that even if we had very good coverage of vaccination for flu, which we don't, we tend to have, I mean, at best, maybe 30, 40, 50% in the country. So it's not a really high coverage like they had in that case. That even if we had that, the way flu evolves probably wouldn't drive it to be a more virulent kind of virus.
Well, you've said that our immune system is pretty incredible. It's like a 3D printer on steroids. And there are people in the natural health community and elsewhere who say that the body's own immune system can fight off the flu and viruses. So if that's the case, why should we get vaccinated?
That's a good question. We do have very good, we have a miraculous immune response. The problem is that everybody doesn't. And so when I get a flu vaccine, and if I don't get the flu, what I'm doing is protecting my neighbor who might be more susceptible. Maybe they're immunocompromised. Maybe they're elderly and they're not able to mount a really good immune response. Or maybe they're very young and they can't mount a good immune response. So So by getting vaccinated, people like me or my family are helping to prevent transmission of the virus.
Now, the seesaw effect between viruses and the immune system is really interesting to track. And you write about some Australian rabbits that really show this to good effect. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
So that story is one that takes place. It's in Australia, as you mentioned. And what happened was Australia didn't have a natural population of rabbits. And so some hunters back before last century decided that they would bring some rabbits to Australia. They did, and of course, rabbits being rabbits, they multiplied like rabbits. And there were no natural diseases, no natural predators, and so they became a problem, which is why we hear about things like the rabbit-proof fence and a lot of different... they were basically eating Australians out of house and home and other animals, too. And so the response to that, one way to combat them was basically a kind of biological warfare, was to bring in a disease that could kill off the rabbits. And so they brought in a virus called a myxoma virus that infected rabbits in another country, and they brought that to Australia, and since it was new to that population, it was devastating. And so that virus killed off like 99.99 whatever percent of the rabbits, but a few survived. And so those that survived were resistant to the virus, and they reproduced. And so what ended up happening was there was a seesawing kind of thing between population, and the virus got less virulent, because if it killed off those last few rabbits, there wouldn't be a virus. And so there was sort of a seesawing between the rabbit population and the how virulent or how good a killer the virus was.
And the story kind of gets at another point that you make, that maybe we need to let go of the idea of, for instance, a cure for cancer just because of the nature of the way viruses work. Can you tell us why that is?
Because of the nature of the way viruses work. Well, the reason actually I mentioned cancer in chemotherapy is actually evolution of the cancer cells themselves. And so the thinking there, which was kind of interesting to explore, was how researchers working on chemotherapy agents are now thinking, and cancer-treating drugs are thinking, that they need to take a more evolutionary approach to cancer. Think of cancer as an evolutionary disease. Cancer cells evolve, and they evolve rapidly in response to the chemotherapy and drug agents that we use. And so some have proposed that maybe if we don't, that's so we impose a very strong selective pressure on cancer cells, just like the myxoma was a strong selection pressure on rabbits and immune system, and just like our immune system is a strong selection pressure on viruses, we're imposing a really strong selective pressure on cancer cells. And if we back off, and if we find a sort of cancer drug, if there are drugs that really work and are very targeted to cancer cells, there's some suggestion that maybe researchers explore sort of trying to keep a population of cancer cells that remain sensitive to the chemotherapy or targeted drugs around and in play.
How would you do that? How would you keep them sensitive?
Well, I think it's you don't blast them. I'm not a cancer drug developer researcher. I do know that one example of this in a totally different situation is in agriculture, where the genetically altered BT corn, so the corn carries a gene that makes it toxic to the insects that feed upon the corn. And one requirement for farmers who were using the BT corn was to have a refuge area. So they needed to plant corn that didn't have that gene, because that would allow the insects to feed upon that corn that wouldn't develop resistance, because they weren't feeding upon the BT corn. They were feeding upon non-BT corn. And so that sort of, they could dilute the population of insects that might get resistant by feeding on BT corn. And so that's sort of an analogy, is that if you can keep a population of insects or cells around that can sort of dilute that resistant population, then you might be able to keep the disease population or the pest population in check.
Now, there's a hopeful note that you write about. It's still theoretical. It's not widely in practice. But you talk about the possibility of a universal vaccine, which I guess could wipe out things like the flu and a whole bunch of other stuff, too. What is the universal vaccine that we're talking about?
Well, so the universal vaccine is sort of that's kind of a name for various different types of vaccines that are being developed against the flu. how flu tends to evolve is there's a specific region of the flu that's sort of very mutable. It's a protein that evolves pretty rapidly, and that evolves in response to our immune response. What universal vaccines try to do is target a part of that protein that evolves rapidly that doesn't evolve, that's highly conserved. And by doing that, it's a protein that tends to be similar among flu strains and different flu viruses. And so by targeting this highly conserved region that doesn't evolve in response to our immune system, it might make a vaccine that's more broadly active and a vaccine that might last longer than just the year or two that the vaccines tend to be effective for, because flu is constantly evolving.
Now, as we wrap up here, you've asked yourself, should I get my child the flu vaccine? She seems perfectly healthy. What's your takeaway about the safety of vaccines?
I get my children vaccinated. I think that vaccines, it's indisputable that flu vaccines save tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of lives a year in this country. And so it's very important that we do get vaccinated, and also not just to protect ourselves, as I mentioned earlier, but to protect other more vulnerable people in our population. And so my takeaway is to get vaccinated, and the exploring whether or not flu vaccine can sort of cause a more virulent strain of flu is really more of a hypothetical kind of thinking, and something that is likely not to happen.
Emily, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Emily Monison, environmental toxicologist and the author of Unnatural Selection: How We Are Changing Life Gene by Gene.